because we have lived better. And because we have lived better, and because we are better people, a better world will slowly emerge from this confusion. A world which depends for its survival not upon scientific juggling of natural laws, but upon the integrities of people coming into birth with a firm resolution to get along with each other. Every form of intemperance, of intolerance, must be corrected in the individual. Now, if we suppose that we have some terrible catastrophe, a large part of humanity should be wiped out. Well, the real answer to that is that nothing is wiped out. That the individuals who apparently leave here will be somewhere and will be back in due time. And they will live then according to what they did to cause the trouble or what they sacrificed in the hope of curing the trouble. The individual's integrity is his only security. It is the only thing that can surpass in strength and significance the small laws of security which we have in this world. So I like to think that in the new idea of humanism, that we will have one humanity functioning forever, or at least for all available, reportable time. Nothing is forever except foreverness itself. But for ages to come, humanity can be a great unfolding motion through space in which a divine creation, gradually becoming inwardly enlightened, can build for itself a future in harmony with the will of God. These things can happen, but we have to use whatever means we have to make them happen. We know, for instance, that most people have a tendency to be good-natured, and that the majority of them assassinate this tendency every day. They do something that is not pleasant, not kindly, not charitable. In this quiet charity of ours, jealousy pops up, and we're sorry afterwards, but we said a lot of mean things, and as one told me, "I'm sorry I said them, but I'm glad the other person heard him." This is what might be termed the true Christian spirit. Then somebody else doesn't approve of something. Someone always disapproves of things we do. We have the wrong job. We wear the wrong clothes. We go to the wrong church. And somebody has to save us from this deadliness of our own inadequacy. So someone who doesn't know a thing about it will become a violent reformer. If by any chance we prefer our way to the recommendations that this other person makes, then the other person is righteously indignant. They have been denied the right to save us. And so another feud starts. Everywhere people get all worried about something. They're worried about the church their friends belong to. They're worrying about the race their children marry into. They are worried about the job they have. They are worried about the politicians they have and would like to vote for someone else. When they do, they'll keep right on worrying. So people are all upset. And the natural kindliness of the soul has no chance to express itself. This is the reason, probably, why monastic orders sprang up in different religions, and those who wished to live the good life simply separated themselves from society, retired into a convent or a monastery, and remained there, spending their lives in prayer and meditation. This sounded as though it might be a pretty good idea, but it was actually a failure, for the simple reason that these people gradually became useless. They did nothing for anybody except try to save their own souls, which was a mistake. The whole of humanity is built upon an idea of cooperative comradeship, everybody helping everyone else to fulfill their proper, reasonable, and honorable desires. So in true, the idea of a true humanity, modern humanity, is a cooperative. A process in which the problems that arise are solved by the people who have them. Imagine what it would save in the terms of money if we could all solve our own problems rather than spend elaborate sums in order to have professionals try to solve them for us. If we could take care of the little differences that come up so that we have no longer lasting grievances, we would have better dispositions, there would be fewer heart transplants and things of this kind, because we are destroying our own dispositions and our health by our attitudes. So if we want to try and get into this better world of the future, we all have the right to be right. We have the right to do the thing as it should be done, regardless of how other people do it. We have a right to be kind even when others are unkind to us. We have a right to be honest while we are being cheated. We have a right to be patient while things go into confusion. We have a right to become bigger than circumstances. Until we are, circumstances will continue to press down on us with an almost irresistible force. So we have the right at all times to a strength beyond anything that the world can confer. The strength of a dedicated will is beyond human attack. We can do it. Now, the dedicated will in ancient times sometimes led to the stake, torture, and those kind of problems. Fortunately, those days have more or less disappeared, although some of it seems to linger in the outskirts. But we are now largely safe physically. The main thing is we are ridiculed and we are penalized if our attitudes are not in harmony with the times we live in. This type of penalization, however, is becoming so general that there is a tendency for those so penalized to unite, organize, and stand for their rights. Little by little, the policies of entrenched minorities are being broken down by the people whom they have failed to protect. And little by little, the great power of the many is being restored. The main problem now is that the many will have something constructive to offer. The only way in which the many can really solve the problem is to release native intelligence, to become capable of common sense, a mysterious faculty which is in short supply and in eternal demand. The common sense tells us the facts of things, unvarnished and free from all the promotion, public relations, and salesmanship that is afflicting our society. Common sense tells us that we should not spend more than we make. Common sense prevents us from splurging in times when economy is indicated. Common sense tells us that if we live poorly, as Ben Franklin pointed out, we will not have the penalties that we will suffer if we live richly and lose everything we have. All of these points come into common sense. The fact that a person knows that when he's cruel, he's wrong. That he knows when he's selfish, he's wrong. Knows when he hurts other people, he shouldn't. And knows that when he is wrong, he will apologize. And that he will live within his means, and that he will bring to his family or their families all of the ideals and integrities that will help to build them into a closer unity. All of this also demands, whether we know it or not or care for it or not, that each individual shall have some kind of a religious life. A religious life is not a superstition. Materialism is a superstition. The individual who believes that those who have never done it are suddenly going to do it are superstitious. Actually, the great strength and security of humanity is in the inward realization that there is a power that man cannot pervert, and that this power has never been revengeful, that this power has never tried to hurt anybody. This power is a kind of a universal law, benevolent in every aspect, working constantly for the improvement and salvation of all that lives. But this law is real. those who break it feel it in the form of punishment. They feel this law suddenly standing against them and injuring their private projects and their personal wishes. But if we have one great divine benevolent principle at the source of life, if we can realize this, and if we can survive the skepticism of persons who know nothing about it, we can have a great strength. In Japan, one of the Buddhist sects is given to making pilgrimages of various kinds. And in pilgrimage, the pilgrim walks from one shrine of his sect to another wearing his broad-brimmed straw hat. And on the straw hat is a monogram which says that he is never walking alone, that he is making this journey with another. And that other is Buddha. That wherever he goes, whatever he does, the other is with him. The other, meaning truth, meaning integrity, meaning righteousness, is with him and always will be. This lack of isolation seems to be very important in some religions and in many Christian sects. The idea that truth is not distant, that love, the love of God, is not something saved there far off in space for the members of one denomination, but that always in everything we do, deity is present because it is the root of ourselves. No one can be alive without deity being there. And when life here ceases, deity goes on with the deceased into another dimension of life. So always having with us the power of infinite good and the power of infinite love, we should be able to do a little better in meeting the daily problems which may cause irritation or dissension. All we have to do is keep the rules. We have to keep the ethics, keep the integrities. We have to be kind. We have to represent our understanding of compassion. We have to be slow to criticize the acts of others because of the mysterious limitations within ourselves. But little by little, we can gradually get to a point where some of the common mistakes that are not only making us trouble, but through us, the whole world, we can escape from this net of our own compromises. That we do not have to compromise. We can do it right in the first place if we really want to. Now, people who do not understand these things do not really want to change. I know people whose great joy in life is nagging someone. Nothing else seems to really supply them. But if you took those persons and analyzed them, you would find there's something wrong inside. And here psychology comes into the situation, but mostly in a half-baked manner. The individual who doesn't like anyone goes to an analyst to find out why, and he gets a definition which is probably essentially true. That he is that way because of incidents in his own previous life, which he have been submerged, and which are now fighting their way to the surface at the expense of his present disposition. This is probably reasonably true, but what do we get as a real solution for this? How is this individual suddenly not going to do it? The idea is that if he finds out the cause, he will correct it himself. This is optimism. He generally doesn't do anything of the kind. He finally has an excuse for his present condition, and he works it for all it's worth. This I've seen happen many, many times. But theoretically, a person with problems has to face problems. Sometimes he discovers his memory is a very useful thing. One of the things we are warned about by materialists is that we shouldn't trust memory unless it has been schooled at Harvard. But at the same time, if we don't trust memory, we're going to miss a number of things. We can remember back to the situations of early life that could very well have caused the difficulties that we have. And these difficulties will keep right on bothering us. And we will say, it's not my fault at all. It was my uncle who was to blame. He's the one who caused it all. Or it was my family breakup that set me onto the wrong path. But realizing this, the individual can stop and begin to use an alchemistical transmutation of his own remembrances. And if he can clean the mysterious stables of his own memories, he can do a great deal to improve his present disposition. No matter what happened to him anywhere along the line, he can get over it if he really wants to. So he can say to himself, yes, this was my cause of trouble. Now, what is it that happened at that time that in the divine plan of things had to happen to me? Why did I have to go through that? Why does the neighbor have children that are happy and they're living together in comparative tranquility? And my family went on the rocks. Why did this happen? Well, there are all kinds of answers, but the substance of the matter is, as we look at it today, that the condition that has been caused is wrong, and that this condition has been allowed to control life and make trouble for the individual, maybe for 60 or 70 years. He's never got over his grievance. He was here to get over the grievance. And philosophy, religion, science should teach him that there is a grievance to be recovered from, and that it is only his own integrity that will do it. And when it comes to leaning on science for this type of recovery, it can only go so far. It can help to clarify the problem, but no individual can solve it without the use of his own willpower, common sense, and integrity. So we have all these problems that are here to make us learn. We are here to realize that this schooling we are going through is an educational process. Life in this world is not a vacation. It is a period of schooling. It is something in which we have lots of opportunities to be happy. We can occasionally take a nice ripe apple to the teacher if we want to. We can have good friends in school. We can have interesting lessons to learn. But we are here to learn. And by learning, to accomplish the one thing that learning can do, and that is help us to correct our own mistakes. We are going to have to be individuals. We're going to have to be elements in a new type of humanistic society, one in which each individual assumes a responsibility for his own conduct and will keep on assuming that responsibility until his life is devoid of any of the intemperances that cause him to be in trouble. The alcoholic, the drug addict, all of these types of people have simply flunked an examination. They have had an opportunity to do something with their life, and some disappointment, some disillusionment destroyed it. I know one case in which a family was ruined for an entire generation because one of their children didn't do what the parents wanted. Well, what the child wanted to do was not essentially wrong. He simply wished to have an opportunity to think for himself. And the family decided that if he did not think their way, he was a heretic. So they consequently threw him out of the house, and that man did not see his parents for 30 years simply because he did not want to think their way, and what he wanted to think was not in any way wrong. It was simply the right to live his own life as constructively as possible, whereas the parental viewpoint was that he could never live a constructive life without complete obedience to the instruction of his ancestors. All of these problems come back time and time again. And as they all go along, one way or another, they cause a certain obscuration that is rather important. At a time when the whole world is in trouble, where no one seems to be quite certain what should happen next, why is it not possible for the private citizen to at least gain certain securities from world conditions? If we really understand life, we can learn from this situation. We can gain new strength for proper integrities. If we have been a little intolerant in our religion, we can look around and see today what happens with intolerance in religion, what it is doing to millions of people, we're murdering each other in the name of divine love. If we want to know what's wrong with our economic system, we can find out. We can see how a complete addiction to the profit concept, with no consideration for values or for moralities or ethics, that money being the only suitable reward for anything, we are all moving inevitably towards bankruptcy. This we can see, and we take what little funds we have and use them wisely, kindly, and graciously, and not in the desperate effort to make more from them than they are worth. And the same is true of health. Our health problems are largely controlled from within ourselves. Most ailments begin through a corruption of natural law. Something goes amiss, we do nothing about it. We keep on breaking the rules until finally the body gives up in despair. A good disposition is invaluable to the health of the body. The nagger, the critic, the individual constantly on the ragged edge of unhappiness or antagonism, was bound to suffer physically as a result. In many cases, the mental breakdowns of advancing years are simply due to the fact that the individual never used his mind properly when he had it in full supply. Everything has to work out. We have to get the things that are needed, and we have to do them. So our courts of law are buried in cases, most of which are in one way or another a monument to ulterior motives. Our hospitals are bulging with patients who are paying exorbitant fees for failure to have used common sense in the first place. All our industries are in trouble. Competition is destroying one corporation after another, and the great struggle to control goes on, and the great leaders of our lives, the great educators, do nothing about this. They keep right on in the laboratory trying to decide what is smaller than a gnat on a gnat's back. We are told that if we can merely get into communication with the Milky Way, it's going to be pretty big stuff. But actually, in the meantime, the Earth is neglected. We are gradually failing in most scientific projects to recognize the importance of sewerage. We have to have some way to get rid of what we don't want. Now, when it's mental and emotional sewerage, we have trouble with it in ourselves. It causes all kinds of stoppages and all kinds of ailments. And the individual's digestion, ruined by his disposition, continues to damage his health. While we're building the great skyscrapers and we're building the great neutron machineries, we are forgetting what to do with the nuclear waste. No one is even thinking of stopping doing it. We're polluting everything in sight. We don't know where to go next. We're liable to fill the ocean up one of these days. Then we put it in tin cans and put it in the bottom of the ocean, knowing that in a certain number of years the tin cans will disintegrate and they'll all come out. And they call the people who think these things this way pretty big people, really great minds. And we honor them and build statues for them on the campuses. These people just do not function right. And we've got to overcome this before we can really function correctly. Now, we're going to leave the world not in the not too distant future, most of us, and it's not going to be all just up to us to live in the new world that's to come. We may come back to it. But the main problem is to try to make a reasonable improvement of ourselves so that we will not waste the 80 years or whatever it is that have been allotted to us in this world. The only successful solution is that we will leave this world a little wiser and a little better than when we came in. If this achievement is not there, then the real purpose of embodiment has not been achieved. We've got to try constantly to leave this world better ourselves and leave behind us a better world than the one we came into. Now, this is against political ambitions. It is against all this great power play that we are living with. And we look around us. How about the simple process of taking some of this vast amount of money that we are spending in all kinds of weird projects and seeing if we can't, instead of putting a man on Mars, make life safe for a man on Earth? Why can't we begin to use our research facilities to clean up our own dirt? Why should we spend all our time wandering about in space where we're having nothing but trouble here? This is something we all have to work on, but it calls for common sense. And this has always been the same. After a certain period of the misapplication of authority, the people rise to solve their own problem. And today there are more and more who are concerned with these problems and who are determined to do something about them. The whole purpose, apparently, of human existence is to make this world safe for humanity. The great science of humanism is the science of how it's done. How can we make sure that poverty, crime, unemployment, and corruption of basic elements and materials, the exploitations of natural resources, how can we be sure that these mistakes are corrected? What kind of a level of intelligence do we have to establish to make sure that life here is saved from the corruptions of selfishness, superstition, and fear? If we do not accomplish this, science has not done too much for us. But if science can now turn and devote itself to the explanation of the reason for humanity, the aims for which we were intended, the plan to which we belong, and will give us a working schedule of self-improvement and cooperation and integrity, and gradually weed out dishonesty, we will all have a much better chance to live. And this is the problem. There is a lot of potential genius in the human being. Most of this is now killed out. The individual is not permitted to become the great scholar, the great philosopher, or the great, really great scientist, as was the case in ancient times. He is not permitted to be a great artist. You can only think now of painting something that someone will buy. And because of the low level of the customers, his art is becoming more and more deteriorated, and so is his music. All of these things show the decline of values. And at the seat of it all is a great educational institution, with the primary purpose of which should be to perpetuate values, to make them real, to give the individual a trestle board of achievements and plans and programs and projects by means of which each individual in his own way will have the opportunity to live his life constructively and in conformity with natural law. Until these things are achieved, until this is accomplished, we're just going to have trouble. But this new system is arising. Everywhere on earth, people are becoming more and more conscious that the first problem that must be solved is humanity. And that when that is solved and we are all safe and sound, then we can speculate. But until that has been achieved, the attention being directed to other things almost exclusively is dangerous. We have to solve the human problem first. And the only way we can do it is to bring it into harmony with natural law. For nature knows how we should solve it and always has. When we departed from natural law, we got into trouble. When we can go back again and find out where the mistakes were and get the ship of state back on the proper course of life, we will find that things will work out reasonably well. Well, that's it.